It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
All right, Sandy Rios with you this morning. I have so much news that I'm going to just launch right in. We talked with Gordon Chang on Friday with a pretty broad update about what's going on with China, not only in China, but also our relationship with China, and yet we did not cover everything. And so important this morning that you should know you heard in the middle of American Family Radio News, which, by the way, they do such a great job. They cover all the latest. They're probably the best news outlet right now on the planet, at least in this country. But China has a consulate in Houston, and now the concern is that that's kind of been the center of stealing American intellectual property and America's private information. And so the Trump administration did not let them know. They just didn't give them any notice. They just said, we're closing you down. You've got to be out, I think, I forgot how many hours, 72 hours. Out, get out, get out. And of course, now there's a fire in the consulate and the Chinese won't let them in because, you know, you can smell paper burning. They're burning and burning and burning. So China's pretty upset. And they are demanding that the U.S. revoke that decision, and then they say they will take necessary countermeasures. It is, I don't know what those countermeasures will be. Nobody does, and we're supposed to be scared. And so we should be scared just to let them operate business as usual in this country, and that's what we've been doing for way too long. All right, so President Trump yesterday signed two actions against China, different actions. Number one was the Hong Kong Autonomy Act, which is a reaction to that law that they passed reinstating like Chinese rule over Hong Kong in a breach of their agreement with Hong Kong, which was supposed to continue to have, they said, what, one country, two different systems of government. That was the promise that was made. And now mainland China is grabbing back Hong Kong. And that's why the protesters have been in the streets for months. And now the protesters are disappearing. We believe that many of them have been killed. Lots of people are disappearing in China. And so the president has signed that Hong Kong Autonomy Act saying that we will now treat Hong Kong in terms of sanctions and all of the rest of it the same way we treat mainland China. And that's going to hurt. He also signed an executive order that ends United States preferential treatment of Hong Kong, which is kind of what I just described. He said, I signed legislation and an executive order to hold China accountable for its oppressive actions against the people of Hong Kong. It imposes sanctions on entities that help violate Hong Kong's autonomy and financial institutions that do business with them, and comes as a response to the passage of that national security law that tightened Beijing's grip on Hong Kong. So that's two things that the president did on China. Trust me, there's a lot in the works. We are learning, and I may not have even said this to you, but I should have just because. But it's just like one of the 5,433 things that I'm trying to follow. But China, I guess this loops into this next story. Chinese nationals, and especially members of the Communist Party, have been coming into the country in floods for decades now. Now, there's nothing. Look, I loved the Chinese people. I probably told you that. You've heard me say that. I'm talking about the party, and I'm talking about the Communist Party and all those that are loyal to Xi Jinping. It's so dangerous. And they have found a way to infiltrate themselves here, to buy businesses, to start working in our stock market. And now it's gotten so far that the federal pension fund is deeply and widely invested in Chinese companies that develop weapons to destroy us. That's as simple as that. And entities and people and communists who are working to undermine and destroy the country, we're actually financing that. So there's a move underway to remove federal pension funds from any Chinese companies. I'm not saying any. I shouldn't say that because I don't know what the restrictions are, but companies that are involved in any of that. So that kind of comports with this next thing. This is what Congress now wants to do. This is not the president. There's a loophole in the National Defense Authorization Act, which is imminently going to be voted on, which has to do with the EB-5 visa program, which is how most wealthy Chinese nationals secure American citizenship. This is how they get in. And the deal is, I remember when this was passed, the deal is that if they invest in the United States, then they have a path to citizenship. So that's what many of them have been doing now for a long time, so that they can get themselves into our markets and our financial infrastructure. And China owns already a ton of the United States because of these kinds of programs. So the Congress is trying to pass this, and that's just one part of the National Defense Authorization Bill that I expect the president might have some trouble with. So just want you to know what your Congress is up to, and that's why we need to pay attention and get the bums out on both sides of the aisle. Dangerous, the things that they've been doing and the way they've been not paying attention. Now, I want to move to something else. You know that there is trouble in lots of big cities. And last night, Chicago, outside a funeral home, there was a mass shooting. A car went by an SUV, and at least 14 people were shot, sent to hospitals. It was allegedly, according to, well, this is an eyewitness account, all we saw was just bodies laying everywhere. A shot up everywhere, all over, legs, stomach, back, all over the place. We thought it was a war out there. And that's Arnita Gerter, who was a witness to what happened. And so we don't know much about the details of this, but I guess the point I would say is that President Trump on Monday, now what is this, Wednesday, vowed to send federal forces into Chicago because of the violent crime spike. And, of course, Lori Lightfoot is, you know, not having it. The Department of Homeland Security plans to deploy dozens of federal agents in Chicago to deal with the uptick in violent crime. And Lori Lightfoot, the mayor, last Tuesday night said, under no circumstances will I allow Donald Trump's troops to come to Chicago and terrorize our residents. So now the troops that you see are Donald Trump's troops. Of course, that's ridiculous and bizarre, and it's like the Saul Alinsky tactic of targeting, making it personal. It's just lying, and they're masters at stating things in such a way that will alarm people when there's nothing to be alarmed about, that this is perfectly lawful. The federal government, especially when it's federal property, like what's been happening in Portland, the attack on the federal building, the attempt to destroy it, they have every right under the legal code to go in and defend and protect federal buildings, which is what they did in Portland. So this is what Rudy Giuliani had to say. 14 citizens of Chicago were shot at a funeral. They are fighting for their lives. Pray for them. If Mayor Lightfoot had accepted help from Donald Trump earlier, a lot of lives would have been saved. And so it goes. And by the way, this is what she further said, Mayor Lightfoot. We do not welcome dictatorship. That's her comment. We do not welcome dictatorship. So Chicago continues to be under such a siege, just like the other major cities. And, of course, it's personal to me because that's my hometown. But it's a problem. And the way it's being positioned, you know that the mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler, is having a fit about federal troops coming into Portland to protect that that federal building. And the leftist press is going apoplectic, and I can't play all of it for you, but I will play this one. This is John Heilman, who was on MSNBC. This is the way they're spinning the federal authorities going into Portland to protect the federal building, clip 10.
I think we should all take very seriously the prospect that this is, as I say, a dress rehearsal, a trial run for first an attempt at voter intimidation on Election Day. Are these unmarked paramilitary units going to be doing security at the polls in battleground states? I think that's a question we'd like to have answered. That is potentially an effort of voter intimidation. And then what happens in the overtime period? Anybody who's serious about this election recognizes, listening to the president, that there's a very high likelihood that he is not going to concede if he loses on election night. In those 2.5 months after Election Day until January 20th, if Donald Trump has lost this election, The things that we're seeing right now, these incredibly alarming, incredibly disturbing images, unmarked paramilitary units that have no clear chain of command, no clear identification, taking
all right,
protesters
we get the point.
And putting them
we get
in unmarked
the point.
Vehicles.
So, this is what they're saying, and of course, it starts out sounding ridiculous, But you can see what they're going to do. They're telling us what they're going to do. And believe me, when they accuse the right, that's us, you know, most of us. Some of you listening, you know, are critics, and I'm glad you're listening, by the way. But they're not. He's not talking about you. But when they accuse those of us on the right of this and that and this and that, it's because that's what they do, okay? Just sort of put that in the back of your mind, put it in your pipe, smoke it, and understand that that's what they do. They always accuse, you know, there's a term for that in psychology. What is it? Transference, something. They tell you what they're going to do. They give you a signal. And what they're accusing President Trump and the rest of us for doing is what they have in their minds to do, and that is corrupt the election, take over by force. But they want to accuse President Trump of doing that. Those I don't even need to say it. Do I? Do I need to say that the people that went into Portland, you've seen Portland for the last 54 nights, burning and looting and killing? Does anybody seen that? And Ted Wheeler, oh, in fact, one of the congressmen from Oregon, whose name I can't remember in this moment, was on the floor of the House yesterday saying, there's no problem with Portland. Portland's perfectly fine. The president, you know, sent the president's troops came in, blah, blah, blah. It's a game. It's a dangerous game. And yet they're playing it very well, I have to say. So Mayor Lori Lightfoot in Chicago is not the only one. New York City, by the way, violence has skyrocketed. 17 people were shot on Monday. June was the most violent in the city since 1996. And as the president tweeted, the New York City is cutting police funding by $1 billion. And yet the New York City mayor is going to paint a big, expensive yellow Black Lives Matter sign on Fifth Avenue, denigrating his luxury avenue. And de Blasio responded, here's what you don't understand. Black people built Fifth Avenue and so much of this nation. Your luxury came from their labor, for which they have never been justly compensated. Could I just stop and say, you know, I would imagine, now I wasn't there, but I bet like Black and white people were responsible for Fifth Avenue. What do you think? And I bet also that Black and white people benefit from Fifth Avenue. What do you think? I bet some brown people do, too. Since we have to talk about colors, I bet some Chinese people do, too. Yeah, but de Blasio, the communist, only sees the world because he wants to in racist terms, because that serves their purpose to conquer and take over and destroy. That's what they're about the business of doing. And that reminds me of something else. I'm going to have to move on because there were 42 shootings in Portland, by the way, this month. But the congressman, you know, from Portland, oh, there's nothing wrong in Portland. President needs to stay out. There's nothing wrong with us. All right. I think I want to move to this. Yep. So I want to tell you about some pushback because you should be encouraged, and I don't do enough of that for you. In New York City, I'm going to get criticized for this, I know, but people are pushing back. There's an artist that rendered Mayor de Blasio holding a severed head of Lady Liberty. And he's wearing a T-shirt that shows Marxist revolutionary Che Guevara. So New York has turned into a blank hole because of this guy, the artist said. He hates the two New Yorkers, police officers, firefighters, people who built this city. So de Blasio is getting a little pushback. In California, the city washed away its Black Lives mural after a Trump supporter demanded that she be able to paint MAGA 2020 in the same street. So they decided they would wash away Black Lives Matter rather than do that. And in Miami, a Black Lives Matter organizer faces felony charges after being accused of stealing flags from a pro-Trump caravan. There's a lot more detail about that, but he has been he's charged with felonies. So that's interesting. Also in California, a Black Lives Matter protester was arrested. It was the leader, a female, Tiana Arata. She was apprehended and placed inside a police vehicle in San Luis Obispo as other protesters were loading their placards and items into the car. And then in Dallas, the police chief has arrested nearly 700 protesters. They've been taken into custody for blocking the highway. And then just a little icing on the cake, a Portland riot organizer has, you know, spoken out. Portland riot organizer Lil Sinclair says that the mission of Black Lives Matter is the abolition of the United States as we know it. Okay, so I just wanted you to know, you know, some news you might not hear other places. We'll be back after this.
Well, these are certainly tough, tough times, aren't they? Hi, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. You know, I'm grateful that God has given Bible League a platform for more than eight decades to address the other pandemic, and that's the shortage of Bibles all over the world in places like Asia, Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America. In fact, at Bible League, we determined that as few as one Christian in 10 has a Bible. What's that mean? That during this pandemic, many evangelical Christians elsewhere in the world cannot open their Bible and be reminded of God's promises, like 1 Peter 5:7, cast your cares on Him, for He cares for you. But you know, during this time of sheltering in place, we can shelter in grace. Learn how you can be a blessing to believers around the world praying for a Bible by visiting sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org, or by calling Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Audrey Davis, Director of the Defense Finance and Accounting Service. Her office oversees accounting activities of 12,000 employees at 10 locations around the world. Proverbs 20:10 reminds us of the importance of accurate accounting. Differing weights and differing measures, the Lord detests them both. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to give guidance to Audrey Davis in her work at the Department of Defense. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
These challenging times have shown a college degree is more important than ever. But if the loss of Virginia's tuition assistance grant for certain new online students is holding you back, Liberty University is here to help. We're stepping in to replace your lost VTAG funds with our LU Tag Award and combining it with a $3,600 undergraduate transfer student scholarship or our already low first responder and military discounts to save you up to 60% on your degree. We've got this, Virginia. Learn more by texting LU Tag to 49595. That's LU Tag to 49595.
What a strange time in American history. Right is wrong, wrong is right. Our values have been turned upside down. That's the only way to explain what's happening in St. Louis, where a prosecutor funded by George Soros has declared war on a law-abiding homeowner. Mark McCloskey and his wife are now facing felony gun charges after they defended their historic mansion against a rampaging mob. Prosecutor Kim Gardner said the McCloskeys put the mob in danger. But in reality, it was the mob who put the McCloskeys in danger. They tore down a wrought iron fence. They stormed into a private neighborhood, trespassing on a private street. They threatened to burn down the McCloskeys' home and kill the family dog. So the McCloskeys did what any right-thinking American would do when an angry mob shows up at your front door. Be sure to catch my national radio show noon to 3 Eastern, or you can download the entire show online at toddstarnes.com.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Oh, that was the wonderful, wonderful noises coming out of the Portland protesters. And how many times have I said to you at this microphone, those are our kids? That happens. They happen to be white because I have to distinguish, you know. We have to distinguish always between colors. Oh, those are two white kids. So two of our children out there like overgrown, undisciplined, out of control, spoiled brat toddlers. And I find myself wondering, okay, this girl screaming, that she was the last scream that we heard. It's not funny. It's absolutely appalling, isn't it? I mean, there's a reason we call them spoiled, isn't it? Because if, like, if you spoil fruit, it smells. You don't want to touch it. Flies come. That's what spoiled is, and that's the way our kids are right now. Our children, the fruit of our wombs, have become rotten. And so we're seeing them on the streets. Now, there might be a reason. We've talked about the education programs, the indoctrination there. We've talked about media and everything. But one thing we've not really talked about is, what are these kids reading? I mean, if they are reading, what are they reading? And so I've asked Paul Kinger. You know, Paul is not as frequent a guest as I'd like him to be, but he's a professor of political science at Grove City in Grove City, Pennsylvania. He's also the executive director of the Center for Vision and Values, also a senior editor at the American Spectator. And I've asked him to join us this morning because he's discovered a little nugget in a teen girl's magazine called Teen Vogue, and we want to talk about it. Paul, thanks for joining us again this morning.
Yeah, anytime, Sandy. Thanks.
All right, so this particular, first of all, tell us about, look, I used to be a devotee of 17 magazine when I was a kid. I loved it. I had the main model was Colleen Corby. I still remember, and she was my idol because she was so pretty. But 17 magazine was pretty, you know, nice then. What's Teen Vogue like?
Yeah, it's funny. I was at the gym yesterday, and my friend Ron, kind of a big weightlifter guy who reads my stuff in American Spectator, he came up to me and he said, "Hey, Paul, I didn't know that you read Teen Vogue." Right? I said, "Well, actually, I prefer Teen Beats." Right? And I said, "No, I don't." But a friend of mine flagged this, and Teen Vogue has a piece called "Ronald Reagan Wasn't a Good Guy President." And I'm editing as I'm reading the title because the title really didn't make sense. That anti-Trump Republicans want you to believe in. So it was this anti-Reagan piece, and the person who sent it to me, who actually I'll say his name, it was Andrew Coffin of the Reagan Ranch Center in California. He's a former student of mine, Grove City College. And so he watches all this stuff. He's very attuned to it because, you know, Ronald Reagan is what they do there. They're the Reagan Ranch Center. And he said, "Look at this. This is a Teen Vogue." And he said, "Bear in mind, they wrote this piece," and he included a link. And it was a piece that I remembered somebody sent me a while ago praising Karl Marx. So teaching young girls that Ronald Reagan wasn't a good guy, but telling them instead that you want to read Karl Marx. And I remembered, too, because somebody wrote this. It might have been maybe Carrie Gress, who's a women's author. And is it okay to say this on family radio? I don't know. But Teen Magazine, Teen Vogue, published a piece that called A Guide to Anal Sex, and it's for teen girls, and it's up on their website. And so, you know, this is what they're teaching your 13-year-old daughter, right? They're publishing guides to anal sex, and at the same time, they're publishing pieces that praise Karl Marx, that say that Ronald Reagan is not a good guy. And since I published this at American Spectator earlier this week, I've received a bunch of emails, Sandy, and one of them answered a question that a bunch of people asked me. They said, "Well, who cares? Nobody reads this magazine." Well, let's see here. This is from my friend Kimberly. "Dear Paul, Teen Vogue, you are right to take this seriously. The site targeting teens and preteens has 11.6 million unique users and 13.4 million followers on social media."
Wow.
So, yeah, it's read, it's widely read, and here again, you were right to play that clip. I mean, you know, this is where our young people are being quote-unquote educated, right here, sources like this.
All right, so let's talk, just to give people an idea, I think, just a little bit about what they say about Reagan. Now, you've written books about Reagan. You're an expert on Reagan. You're an expert on communism, all kinds of things. Like I always say, Paul, you got to not retire till my grandchildren come to college at Grove City. But I mean that. But let's talk about just a few bullet points on what they're saying about Ronald Reagan that are just not true.
Well, it's the rehash of all the 80s junk that you know, historians like myself and frankly, even honest liberal historians, Sandy, have answered, right? It's kind of this long litany. But she throws in here, and by the way, the author's name is Lucy Diavolo, And as more than one person has pointed out to me, Diavolo actually means devil in Italian. I don't know if that's I don't know if that's a pen name, a pseudonym. I don't know. But among the things that she blames Reagan for is AIDS, right? Helping to foster the spread of AIDS. We've been dealing with that one since at least the late 1980s. And this one, I'm expecting to see more and more of this. Here's a direct quote from the article. Reagan helped exacerbate the racist injustices at the very root of our so-called justice system, helping set the stage for the Black Lives Matter protests, unquote. So maybe pretty soon, Sandy, when you type in Ronald Reagan, a little Google box could pop up and or a little Wikipedia definition saying "father of Black Lives Matter attacks," right? Maybe, or you know, something like that. And also, the author Ms. Diavolo says that Reagan wrote the script for a quote mythical American exceptionalism unquote. And, you know, as we're now learning from the left, you know, America didn't begin in 1776 or 1620 with the Pilgrims, the Mayflower, or really, to borrow from Reagan, 1630 with John Winthrop aboard the Arabella, reading from the Sermon on the Mount and the Gospel of Matthew about America as a shining city on a hill. But according to the New York Times and folks, it began in 1619 with the first Africans brought to America as slaves. And so I would say here that you know, this so-called mythical American exceptionalism, the left is doing a darn good job of blowing up the idea that that America is a shining city upon a hill.
And so Lucy Devil, or Diavolo, also writes, ironically, that historical revisionism is, in short, not cute. So,
right.
Yeah, that's the. I've just said before you join me. I just said I say this a lot, but I have to say it a lot. Remember that whatever the left accuses the right of doing, that's what they're doing. It's exactly what
that's
they're
right.
doing.
That's right. That's right.
So, all right, but I want to move to the meat of this because I think this is something that people will know less about, Paul, and that you address an earlier article that was in Teen Vogue, Who is Karl Marx? Meet the Anti-Capitalist Scholar.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
what
wink,
glowing
wink.
Thing. Yeah, wink, wink. Yeah. So, but people don't know a lot about Karl Marx. I mean, when I was reading what you wrote, I realized I didn't know this stuff you just wrote about Karl Marx. They present him as like this guy. They talk about the myth of the free market. Marx shows very clearly that capitalism emerged through a state of violence. And so they reiterate what kids are taught. I bet they're not taught that at Grove City, but at most other universities, capitalism is now bad, and Marx is a wonderful guy. But let's talk about what the truth is about him, Paul, because it's just stunning to me.
Yeah, that's right. And for listeners, Sandy did not misquote that. No, they said that capitalism emerged through a state of violence, right? Not communism, yeah. Which killed over 100 million people in the 20th century alone. So they're teaching these 13-year-old girls that capitalism emerged through a state of... By the way, while Teen Vogue is just raking in bucks through capitalism, by the way. But, yeah, so I go through in the article... I don't even talk about Marx and death and free markets and everything. I said, well, I'll just tell you about Marx and girls. I mean, that'd be something worth knowing.
Since this is Teen Vogue. Yeah, you should write this for Teen Vogue. But go ahead, please, tell us
about
Marx and girls.
And girls? All right, we could do that. We could do that. So yeah, Marx and his daughter's horrible relationship is absolutely crazy. Two of Marx's daughters, so four of Marx's six children died before he did. And I don't even go through all of this in the article, but among other things, that was through Marx's refusal to earn money, to put a roof over his family's head. But two of his surviving daughters committed suicide in joint suicide pacts with their husbands. And in my coming book, sorry about the shameless plug, it's called The Devil and Karl Marx. I go through some of Marx's writings about the devil and also, Sandy, some of his writings about suicide pacts. Marx actually wrote about suicide and suicide pacts. Well, two of his daughters committed suicide in joint suicide pacts with their husbands. And one of them, his daughter Laura, her husband Paul, who Marx ridiculed as Negrillo or the gorilla because Marx was half Cuban, And so Marx's son-in-law was half Cuban. And so according to Marx, that meant that he had, quote-unquote, Negro blood in his veins. And Marx was an out-and-out racist. That's something, too. That, I mean, you want to cancel somebody, right? You cancel Marx, right? You know, Marx had a very racist past. But in his household, he had sex with, and historians don't know if it was consensual or not. Some of them think it might have been rape. He had sex with the family nursemaid, Helene, who was known as Lenchen. And he got Helene pregnant. This was behind Marx's wife's back. And this absolutely devastated Marx's wife. And the child that was born was a boy. Marx refused to acknowledge the child's existence ever, refused to pay a penny of child support. In fact, Marx refused to pay the family nursemaid, Lenchen, wouldn't pay her any money. So she was working there as basically an indentured servant. And she this completely wrecked the Marx household. And Marx, too, the guy refused to bathe, he refused to groom, he had boils all over his body, including all over his private parts. The guy stunk, he drank too much, he was evicted from house after house. The Marx family was literally left homeless because of Marx's refusal to earn capital. His wife and mother said, "Carl, could you please start earning some capital instead of just writing about it?" But Marx said, this is a direct quote, he wrote this to Engels, "Every day my wife says that she wishes that she and the children were safely in their graves." And that's because they were miserable living under the Marx household. And all of this is stuff about Marx that has been written by biographers for a long, long time. And none of it is anything that you'll find in the Teen Vogue piece.
No, and we have that great picture of him with his like big hair. He looks very respectable in that one picture we always see. This is really stunning, and it does remind you, I'm sorry I have to make this spiritual, I just can't help, it does sound so demonic, all of it. It just sounds so demonic. It's really appropriate that Miss Devil should write about this. And so this is what Teen Vogue won't know. Have you ever thought about, honestly, like writing a letter to the editor, Teen Vogue?
No, I haven't. I don't know if they would publish it. I suppose I could try. But they, I don't know if they would even touch it. But he told Paul Lafargue, who was his would-be son-in-law, Marx told him, he said, quote, "If I had to live my life over again, I would not marry." And, you know, that's the guy that he's telling who's considering marrying Marx's daughter. But by the way, Marx didn't want him to marry his daughter because he was part Cuban. So he was part Negro. And so that, as Marx put it. So, you know, in Marx's view, you know, that didn't make him worthy of his daughter because, again, he was a racist. And Marx told Engels, how's this for a curious take on the Beatitudes, Sandy? He told Engels, quote, "Blessed is he who has no family. Blessed is he who has no family." And in the Communist Manifesto, he writes, quote, "Abolition of the family," quote, unquote. Even the most radical flare up at this infamous proposal of the communists. So all of that is stuff that you won't find in Teen Vogue, which is trying to make Marx out to be cool, anal sex for 13-year-old girls out to be cool, and telling you that Ronald Reagan is bad. So that's what they're telling their 14.6 million followers on Facebook. And if you're a parent who's signing up your teen daughter for this magazine, you are, to borrow from Lenin, a useful idiot.
All right, so Paul, let me just say, we're going to put your article on our Facebook page because people can read and share this, and I hope that they will. Teen Vogue to Teen Girls, Marx Good, Reagan Bad, and of course there's a lot more to the article than just that, but Paul's a good headline writer, so we're going to make it available to you. And also, as soon as his book comes out, The Devil and Karl Marx, you can bet we'll do a full-length interview on that to just talk about this further. It's really pretty stomach-churning, Paul, and I think about Stalin, who was, you know, who wanted to be a minister, who became so demonic and said that the devil was who he listened to. And then I think about Kim Jong-il, the dad in Korea, who posed with those famous pictures, like those Protestant pictures of Jesus in the New Testament and that was being handed out in the 50s. And he imitated, like, Jesus among the children, Jesus, you know, feeding the 5,000. He posed as Jesus. There are religious themes through all of these very dark, horrific, satanic characters of history. Okay, I've talked this out here, but Paul, thank you so much. Grove City College, Paul Kinger, thank you. We'll talk to you again soon, sir. Thanks so much for your time. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
To sharpen the biblical worldview of Christians and to share the good news of Jesus Christ. That is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. I'm host David Wheaton, inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, as we discuss all matters of life and faith from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on American Family Radio.
How to acquire a vessel in holiness and honor, referring to a spouse, referring to a wife, referring to a husband. You know, what the world thinks is, well, what you need to do is you need to get out there, have a lot of sex until you find the one with whom you seem to be sexually compatible, and then that's the one to marry. God says that is not the way you go about it. We're supposed to be looking for a life partner.
Focal Point with Brian Fisher, weekdays at 1 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
God sees not as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture posted its discriminatory whiteness exhibit, wherein they described a hard work ethic, rational linear thinking, and an intact nuclear family as indicative of whiteness. They've been forced by massive public outcry to retract this tripe. In their effort to signal virtue to a rabid culture, the taxpayer-funded Smithsonian revealed just how lowly they actually view the legacy, values, and contributions of melanated Americans today and throughout our history. Beware, the loudest virtue signalers are usually the least virtuous.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with the Life and Liberty Minute. There is no way to make peace with homosexual activists. They are not interested in equality. They are interested in homosexual supremacy. Justice Neil Gorsuch gave the gay Gestapo a monstrous win in a recent court case by inventing an imaginary right to transgenderism. A plaintiff has now sued a Catholic hospital because the hospital would not remove her perfectly healthy uterus so she could indulge the fantasy that she is a man. The Catholic hospital system will not budge on this. If the plaintiff wins, and thanks to Neil Gorsuch, she will, every Catholic hospital in America could be put out of business. By enshrining sexual deviancy as a special right, Neil Gorsuch has put our entire healthcare system at risk.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, the Trump administration ordered Communist China to close its consulate in Houston, prompting diplomatic personnel there to begin burning documents in the facility's outdoor courtyard. The scene evoked memories of Japanese diplomats doing the same on the eve of their nation's attack on Pearl Harbor. Reasons given for the shuttering were China's theft of intellectual property and private data. Given the Chinese Communist Party's conduct in this country, however, other abuses of the PRC's diplomatic privileges may include forcing Chinese nationals to spy in this country, suborning Americans through the so-called Thousand Talents Program, running influence and intimidation operations on college campuses, and supporting the more than 20 communist Chinese military companies ominously doing business here. The truth is the CCP is our enemy. Rolling up and shutting down such threatening behavior conducted here under diplomatic cover is both prudent and necessary. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We've 10,000 people have volunteered. We're going to try to get them plugged in as poll workers, not for us, but running the mechanisms in the states that they work for the state operation.
Yeah, so that's Joe Biden in his bunker telling us what that's just a part of what the Democrats have planned. They've got an army of attorneys ready to sue in every district, everywhere. They're going to have poll watchers. I remember one year in Virginia, I volunteered to, I don't even know what they called us. I wasn't working inside the polls, but outside to make sure we didn't see any vote fraud, just have a presence there. And the thing that I remembered was that there were so many Democrats. There were just like two of us, actually me mostly, and one other person sometimes. And the Democrats were just all over the place. So they are prepared. They are prepared. And one of the things they're preparing for is mail-in voting. So I want us to listen to this report. This is Hillary Vaughn from Fox News last night. Let's listen.
This set off an avalanche of mail-in ballots.
If you want to vote, we should send you a ballot so you can vote so you don't have to come out and get online.
That flooded post offices during New York's primary. It wasn't the number of ballots that was problematic for the post office, but the prepaid envelopes that Governor Cuomo asked for to make voting easy. Because they weren't being postmarked with the date, leaving officials with no way to know if thousands of uncounted ballots were mailed in time to be counted. Now, 28 days after Election Day, a congressional race in New York's 12th district is in limbo, waiting for a winner. A Wall Street Journal editorial warns, quote, it's a dark omen for November.
19% of ballots have been rejected in Queens, 28% rejected in Brooklyn. There are questions about mass mail-out voting.
This presidential election in the middle of a pandemic means vote by mail could be more popular than ever and could prove to be a stress test for the U.S. Postal Service that's drowning in debt. And now the new Postmaster General is going on a cost-cutting spree, warning, quote, we may see mail left behind or mail on the workroom floor or docks. That delay means voters are on deadline. The USPS says voters need to request a ballot at least 15 days before Election Day, but say, quote, the Postal Service's financial condition is not going to impact our ability to process and deliver election and political mail. There aren't just snafus, though, with snail mail.
The State Board of Elections screwed up getting ballots out. They mailed the wrong ballots.
Maryland Governor Larry Hogan says some voters were surprised last month to open up their mailbox and get their primary ballots in Spanish.
Yeah, so that was Hillary Vaughn on Fox News last night. Now, does it take a rocket scientist to figure out what's happening here? I guess I don't think so. So that if you were to say to me, well, the Democrats probably want mail-in voting then. You think that might be the case because you think that might help them? Because I can tell you right now, even with the polls about President Trump a couple of days ago, the Fox polls that Chris Wallace brought up to the president in that interaction, and he said Trump is behind allegedly 10 points. We know that that sample, that particular poll sample, counted 10 percentage points more Democrats than they sampled Republicans. So that's just one part about the poll. 10% more Democrats than Republicans. And yet they tell us that, alas and alack, President Trump is behind by 10 points. See, the Fox News polls are not trustworthy. Most polls are not trustworthy. They are crafted to discourage conservatives and encourage and embolden people on the left. And it works. It works really well. We fall for it every time. We found out in 2016 that those polls were not true. But there's a difference now because you can see on the streets and you can see in the highest levels of government the corruption now that has come into our system, whether it's the judges like the judge in the Flynn case, whether it's the defiance of orders, whether it's defiance of cabinet officials and people that are appointees of the president defying him and doing things behind his back and working their magic in their various offices to try to undermine I don't want to make this about President Trump. It is about him, but it's also about America. It's about the rule of law. It's about the Constitution. It's about our history, our founding, all of it. And he's the only one protecting it. So that's why I mention him. But this is a breakdown of the social and the also the legislative order, not legislative, but governmental order. People are, they think it's like cool to leak, to lie, to work against mutiny, you know, treason. Treason in many cases is fine. FBI's, you know, exhibit A. Somehow it became noble to, you know, lie. In fact, I don't think I have time for this, but we know now that Peter Strzok wrote way back in 2017, we now have one of his texts where he said there's no link between anyone in Trump's campaign and the Russians. We've got an email with him saying that now, back in 2017. That was big news yesterday, and I just haven't gotten to it. That's right after the president took office. And it was in response to a New York Times article trying to link the Trump campaign with Russia. And Peter Strzok, who led the, you know, destructive Russia probe, because the president, according to Strzok and his lover Lisa Page, and, you know, James Comey and the rest of them, was a Russian agent. Yeah, but that was a lie, of course. But that was noble. You see, it's noble to them. James Comey thinks he's noble. They were noble to lie and undermine and do treason and leak to the press. Yeah, so I'm just saying, this is why. So we're in a different time. Here we are in an election for 2020, and we have, I believe, if it were an honest election where people went to the polls in person, I believe the president would win again, and I believe good people would be elected. I do. I think that a lot of our black friends and neighbors are beside themselves with what's happening in their neighborhoods, in their cities. And they are seeing quite clearly that Black Lives Matter does not care a whit about black lives. And as I said to you before, that Portland riot organizer, read her exact quote, Lilith Sinclair. She describes herself as an Afro-Indigenous non-binary protest organizer. She said the mission of BLM, Black Lives Matter, is the abolition of the United States as we know it. Now, that is the mission, so don't be deceived. I've said that to you before. I'm saying it to you again, and I will say it as often as I have to. But now we have this very clever corrupting of our elections, and that brings me to my favorite topic, which is the pandemic, the panic porn, as Alex Berenson likes to call it. We have created a pornographic situation where people are turning against each other over the use of masks, calling each other, what, you don't care, you're selfish if you wear one, you're selfish if you don't wear one. We have people in public places. I see a lot of stories about people who don't want to wear masks doing terrible things. I saw a woman yelling in a store. There's a story yesterday about a woman going into a Verizon store, refusing to put on a mask, and then she just urinated in the store. That was one of the stories yesterday. I see a lot of those stories, but I don't see any stories about the things I'm seeing, which is like mask wearers Nazi-ing up on non-mask wearers. I've experienced that myself several times, lots of times. I experienced it at Mayo. I had one older black lady standing next to a nurse, and I had entered this big, large room where you stand in line to check in, and my mask was down right just below my nose. And the nurse, who was probably 30 feet from me, don't know why she was looking at me, but she was, and she said, "You need to get your mask up." So, well, she's in charge there, so I heard her, and the lady, who was not connected to me in any way, I was too far away from her to even say hello. She was, you know, a third of the way across the room. Turns around with her mask on as she looked at me with, like, I'm thinking hatred sort of like in her eyes, saying, "You, it's you. She's talking to you, you." And then the nurse tries to take them into to me to see the doctor. And she's turning around and watching me and pointing and glaring. So, like, I didn't see that written up. I didn't see anything like that, but we are experiencing that. We're turning on each other. And the point is that the fear about COVID, the lies that are part of our daily, we take it in every day. People are dying. There's a crisis. We have to close down. We have to, more masks. 78% of Americans are saying they're wearing them. Anybody out there maybe think that this might be helpful to people that want to tell you that it's not safe for you to go to a polling place? It's not safe, and you got to be safe. And if you're going to go, you're going to have, you know, 10 feet apart, 15 for heaven's sake, however many feet they say, and you got to wear a mask, maybe a double mask. And maybe when you vote, you got to go through 15 steps of wiping your hands and cleansing and getting a patch to say you did this. Or, you know, maybe you have to wear an ankle bracelet in your home for 2 weeks before the election so that we can make sure that you haven't been around anyone who has COVID. You see where this is going? And then if we have mail-in balloting, which is what they're working and doing very well, getting to that place, that it might affect an election that otherwise might be decided by the people in a very different way. That's exactly what's happening, friends. And that's why the masks are a sign, a symbol. That's why I don't wear one unless I have to in a hospital setting or unless I'm next to somebody like I was on the plane a couple of weeks ago with this young man who was scared out of his mind. Young man, young black man in a complete hazmat suit with like a World War I gas mask on his face, a hood, gloves. And I think I told you this story. He leaned over to me. I had my mask. It was like just below my nose. And he said very kindly, "Would you mind putting on your mask?" And when I looked at him and saw, I said, "If you're that afraid, yes, I will put on that mask." And I did. I read with the mask on. And when we landed, I started to talk to him. Did I tell you this? I can't remember. Rather than getting angry, I had compassion, which I can only attribute to God because I get angry a lot these days. And I just said to him, I asked him what his name was. And he told me, and I said, "You know, did you know that there's a God who loves you? And he created you for something so much more than this. You know, you should be thinking about girls. You should be flirting with someone here on this plane or thinking about sports or, you know, thinking about what you're going to do with your buddies after school. But here you are. This is not what God wants for you. You know, he loves you so much he gave his son." And he reached inside his hazmat suit and pulled out a cross. And he said to me, "Doesn't that mean we should have a sound mind?" And I said, "Yes, I do believe we should have a sound mind. But I think that what's happening with you is not sound. You know, it reminds me of my son. He was little. He used to love to play video games. And sometimes he would play too much. And I could always tell when he was playing too much because he got naughty. And it was like he was disobedient and restless, and I could just tell when and it was too much. It was out of balance. And that's what I see with you. You're out of balance. You are worried. God does not want you to worry like this." And we had a wonderful conversation. My point is that it's not the mask. I'll wear it if I need to wear it, but it is being used as a tool to suppress, to lie to you, to scare you to death. And I would ask those of you, again, that are wearing masks so faithfully, it does seem to me in the world in which I'm living right now and people that I'm seeing that somehow there's this inordinate fear of death, for one thing. And I joke about it. I say, you know, well, when there is a cure for death, people I know, even friends of mine, will stop wearing their masks when they're assured that there will be no more death. Because right now with COVID, there is so little death proportionately. I've told you the numbers. And depending on the state and where you live, the locality, there's like a 0.003 something chance that you will die. If you get it, you get symptoms. And I know some people, you know, but some people die of flu. Some people die of viral pneumonia. We all die. We're going to die. There is no cure for death. I'm sorry to all of you who are thinking the mask is going to save you. It won't save you. And it will destroy the country because how it's being used. And that's why it distresses me so much. This is what I see. And this is why it hurts me that people cannot connect those dots. And by the way, Adam, I'm going to ask you to put that. We had a video yesterday of a guy dressed like the Joker who did like a 3-minute commentary. And it's disturbing. And you won't like it. You won't like the way he does it. But he talks about, the title is "It's Just a Mask." It's just a mask. We're going to put it on our Facebook page because I want you to see it. And please watch it to the end. And I want to give you something to think about as we, you know, we're not helpless now. We're not helpless. I see the president fighting. And so I say to you and to myself, are you going to stop fighting? Really? Are you going to hide in your house and not speak up and pray that there's a cure for COVID? There won't be, by the way. It's been around for decades, one form or another, maybe centuries. Are you going to wait for a cure for death? Are you afraid to die? Why are you afraid to die? There is a God who loves you, doesn't want you to live like this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.